It's common knowledge that stress weakens our immune system. Reset are an amazing holistic, science-based supplement formulated to balance all three body systems that manage stress: nervous, endocrine, and immune. Reset takes a holistic approach to stress management and are vegan, GMO-free, caffeine-free, melatonin-free, and made in the USA. There are specific ingredients such as passionflower, chamomile, and valerian root that help support a strong immune system. I've personally tried the 14-day reset trial, and honestly, it worked wonders for me. I tried both their Calm product, which reduced any daytime nerves I had about meetings, and their Unwind product, which was perfect after a long day of writing and meeting deadlines. What's amazing about their product as well is that it's aesthetically pleasing and smells and tastes amazing. You can also head on over to their website, which is linked below, for their email program, where they teach easy tips to improve your stress response. For example, did you know that there was a science behind why petting a dog makes you feel more relaxed? If you would like to try Reset yourself, you can head to Target.com, which is running a special in the month of June 2020, or order them on Reset.com, that is R3SET.com, with a 10% discount for my listeners, which will last until 2021. Just enter promo code Morbidology. Take control of your stress today. Welcome to Morbidology, the podcast. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. Join me weekly as I uncover some of the world's most heinous murders. On the 23rd of February 2014, a frantic 999 call to Surrey Police was placed by a woman who was desperately running for her life. In the phone call, the woman describes how her mother has been shot dead.
Emergency service.
Right, my mother's just been shot. Keeper's Cottage shot. My mother's just been shot. Keeper's Cottage stabbed. Keeper's Cottage stabbed. I need the police to come to Keeper's Cottage Stud, GU10 2AZ. Telephone no, GU10 2AZ. I'm running for my life. GU10 2AZ.
Alright, where was this happening?
He's just shot my mum, do you know?
Sorry, what's your phone call?
Keeper's Cottage Stud.
Yeah. Is that in Farnham?
Farnham, Surrey.
Okay,
Mr. Pace. Rafferty knows. Rafferty, please get here.
Okay, all right.
I'm going to go back to him. Bye.
All right, Mr. Pace is freezing.
I'm running outside the house. He's going to shoot me.
Okay, is someone being shot, you say?
Yes, get Rafferty.
Okay.
Get Rafferty. I don't know if I'm going to be alive if I go back in there. She shot my mum.
Towards the end of the phone call, she informs the 999 operator that she is going back to the scene of the incident and acknowledges that she will probably lose her life. Her last words to the operator were, "I don't know if I'm going to be alive if I go back there. He shot my mum. Bye." During the 999 call, the woman repeats an address over and over again and informs police her mother has been killed. She also repeats the words, "Rafferty knows," before saying she is going back to the house. Police were directed by the woman on the phone to Keeper's Cottage Stud, which was a secluded farmhouse in Tilford, just outside the affluent Farnham, Surrey. The farmhouse sat on a hillside in 6 acres of woodland. The houses in the surrounding area are worth millions and are hidden behind security gates and lush trees. Keeper's Cottage Stud, however, was semi-derelict and extremely run down. Newspapers were stuck to the windows of the rooms downstairs, while the conservatory had broken glass and the tile roof was in desperate need of being replaced. Armed officers arrived at the scene to find 82-year-old John Lowe, the owner of the farmhouse, standing in the conservatory. He waved at the officers before walking into the house. Officers trained their guns on John and ordered him to come outside and place his hands on the vehicle. With John in handcuffs, officers made their way to the front door and were met by what they described as a scene of carnage. Laying outside the front of the house, they came across a dead guard dog. Behind the property, at the steps, they discovered the body of 40-year-old Lucy Lee, and then in the dining room of the farmhouse, they found the body of her mother, 66-year-old Christine Lee. Both of the women had sustained gunshots. Police and paramedics desperately attempted to resuscitate them, but to no avail. They were pronounced dead at the scene. In addition, police also discovered the bodies of 3 more dogs, all of which had been shot dead. The bodies were sent off for an autopsy, while lead investigator, Detective Chief Inspector Mark Preston, confirmed that all 3 parties knew one another, but would not elaborate any further, and would not speculate on why Lucy and Christine were at the farm. According to a police source, it may have had something to do with dogs, or it could have been completely unrelated. It could have been something completely trivial. We simply don't know at this stage, and it is the main focus of our investigation. The autopsies would conclude that Christine had been shot in the chest with a shotgun from around 1 foot away, while her daughter had been shot in the back of the head with a shotgun from 9 feet away, and then shot in the chest from around 1 foot away. From the 999 call that Lucy had placed, it was evident that Christine had been shot and killed first, and then Lucy attempted to escape before ultimately deciding to go back to the farmhouse and confront John. It was a fatal decision. An investigation into the murders was launched, and police were now attempting to establish the relationship between the victims and John. John Lowe had previously been convicted of illegally breeding dogs, and RSPCA officers and police had raided his home in 2004 and 2008, and then more recently in August of 2013, following more complaints. In 2005, he had lost his license to breed dogs for 2 years after council animal welfare investigations led to prosecutions. In 2008, he was banned again from breeding puppies for 2 years, and then the following year, he was convicted of illegally breeding dogs. He was fined £2,000 and was handed a 5-year ban from breeding dogs following a council investigation. Then in August of 2013, John was reinvestigated for illegal dog breeding after 1,300 people signed a petition demanding that he close down his suspected dog farm. When RSPCA, police and council officials began investigating John, he dismissed the complaints as rubbish. An investigation of his home at the time uncovered more than 50 dogs, but John claimed that they belonged to his stepdaughter, Stacey Banner, and he was not prosecuted. However, all of the dogs were removed from his home. As he told a local newspaper, "There are no puppies here. The only dogs here are my 4 guard dogs. In fact, John had been visited numerous times by RSPCA. According to RSPCA Inspector Rob Jackson, he had seen John just 6 months ago, and more often than not, it was low-level visits, such as his dogs having fleas and John asking for advice on how to properly care for his animals. John had a bad reputation in the breeding community and locally, A number of the puppies he had bred and sold had died shortly thereafter, or would become sick and require expensive veterinary care. In fact, John had twice been investigated by the BBC's Inside Out programme for selling puppies in poor condition. When the bodies were discovered on the farm, RSPCA were called to the scene and removed one cat and 10 dogs, including a number of puppies, which included Chihuahuas, Pomeranians, Shih Tzus, and an old English sheepdog. In addition to the dogs, they removed a number of exotic birds, chickens, and horses. Shortly thereafter, it was revealed that in May of 2013, police had seized licensed shotguns from John after somebody reported that he was heard talking about firing one. His firearms license was revoked, but then was renewed in July and his guns were returned to him. We are in the process of establishing if one of these licensed guns was the firearm recovered on Sunday, said a Surrey police spokesman. Because of John's previous contact with police, the case was referred to the Independent Complaints Commission. Soon enough, the relationship between John and his two victims became apparent. Christine's other daughter, Stacey Banner, described John as her stepfather when she made a public statement. "I'm utterly heartbroken. We've been left in pieces. I just want to wake up and be told it's a dream. My mum and my sister must have been so scared," she said. She described how she had just finished cooking Sunday lunch when officers knocked at her door at 1:20 p.m. and informed her that her mother and sister were dead and John had been charged with their murders. Up until this point, a lot of people had speculated that maybe the two women were there potentially purchasing a dog or confronting John about his breeding. However, Christine had been in a long-term relationship with John. The relationship between the two had begun while John's ex-partner, Susanna Wilson, was still alive. John and Christine had been in an on-and-off-again affair for around 25 years. They met when Christine went to him to purchase a puppy for Stacey and Lucy. According to Stacey, the chemistry between John and Christine was instant, and within weeks, Christine and her daughters had moved in with John, despite the fact that his long-term partner, Susanna, was living there. According to Stacey, John had ruled over the dysfunctional household like a domineering tyrant. John had repeatedly threatened Susanna and Christine, as well as her two daughters. While growing up, Stacey said that John quite often smacked them and threatened that he would kill them. Unsurprisingly, Christine and Susanna hadn't gotten along, which made for high tensions in the home. According to Stacey, there was a lot of jealousy, and if the girls were too nice to Susanna, Christine wouldn't be happy. Eventually, the relationship between John and Christine ended, and she and her daughters left the farmhouse, but they did stay in contact. However, when Susanna became terminally ill, Stacey cared for her, and then following her death in 2013, Christine moved back into the farmhouse to care for John, who by this point was in his 80s. At the time, Lucy lived in a bungalow with her partner, Matthew Richardson, in the affluent community of Virginia Water in Surrey, which was around 20 miles away from the farmhouse. Lucy had worked as a graphic designer and had created a Vodafone logo, but she had not worked since 1994, after she won a court case. Lucy was described by those who knew her as a nature and animal lover. She wasn't a drinker, but smoked like a freight train and had a real sarcastic sense of humour. According to Stacey, Christine made the best meals and always made her daughters laugh with her singing. She was a really, really bad singer, but she really sang, recollected Stacey. Quite often, Lucy would spend time at the farmhouse, helping Christine care for John. However, following the death of Susanna, John had fallen on hard times and was struggling financially after he lost his license to breed dogs at his farmhouse. He stopped breeding horses and often borrowed money from people, including Richard, Lucy's partner. According to Richard, a man of John's generation would not show it, but he believed that he was psychologically traumatized from Susanna's death. While they had been in an on and off again relationship, much like he and Christine, he had lived with Susanna for over half of his life. Following John's arrest, when he was being booked into jail, he was acting unnaturally calm and cavalier, even joking around with the officers.
Have you got a chain on, John?
No.
No? Belt?
No, I'm not a...
You got a belt on?
Yeah, my trousers, yeah.
Yeah, we need your belt as well, John.
My trousers won't stay up with
it. Oh, well, we'll probably seize your trousers anyway, so...
Oh, that's good.
We'll give you a pair with an elastic waist, so they won't come down.
They're very stylish, very comfortable.
I shouldn't have done what I did, I suppose, and I wouldn't be here, would I? I need you to ring the RSPCA.
Right.
Talk to the area manager. He knows me well.
Yeah.
Area manager. Tell him John Lowe told you to ring. Tell him I've put four dogs down at Keeper's Cottage. A cane courser. Three altercations.
What was the first one?
Cane.
How do you spell that?
C-A-N-E. Corsa. C-O-R-S-A. It's Italian Mastiff.
Okay.
They were four dogs I didn't want to leave for anybody else to look after because they were all pushy and somebody would have got bitten. I just want him, just put underneath there, woody collector bodies. And also, underneath there's four pet dogs indoors, little dogs, chihuahuas, to be rehomed. One's in pup.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Yeah.
In about a month's time.
AC Gleason.
Yeah.
Paid $7,500 for that.
Okay, you've done that. Really. Yeah. Just done the interview thing.
So they're nice dogs. Yeah.
So one's in pup.
Sorry. Yeah, the chocolate fruit. One's in pup. On their chocolate in pup. Well, sorry to put that dog down, but I couldn't leave him to anybody else. You know what I mean?
Yes.
The big dog, the cane courser, nobody would have got near him. And the one with him was as bad. And the guard dog on the chain on the front, that was the but I mean, he was a guard dog. That's what he's for. No good leaving people to handle things like that.
Later, he put forward two prepared statements which detailed his version of events. He claimed that he had been under increasing stress because of how Christine and Lucy treated him and claimed that the shootings had been accidental, citing a loose safety catch on the shotgun. He told the officers, "If that cow hadn't gone mental at me, I wouldn't have gone and pulled the trigger. I didn't mean to pull it." He also claimed that he later attempted to shoot himself at the farmhouse as well after realising what he had done.
I was going through the door, holding the gun up to go through the door. They were both barraging me in front of me, barricading me. So I pulled the trigger, I don't think I even meant to.
The day after the murder, John appeared in court. As he faced the judge, Stacey broke down in an emotional outburst and cried, "Why? Why? I love you." When asked to confirm his name and address before magistrates, he replied, "I'm a little bit deaf, love." He was remanded in custody. In August, John was back in court. When asked how he pleaded to the murder charge of Christine, he angrily replied, "Definitely not guilty." And when asked to enter a plea for the murder charge of Lucy, he once again angrily replied, "Definitely not guilty. I didn't even know that she had been shot." He was next asked to enter a plea for the further charge of possessing a firearm with intent to endanger life. He responded with, "Not guilty. I had a shotgun license. I was licensed for 7 guns. Not guilty." He was ordered to stand trial on the 6th of October at Guildford Crown Court. As I'm sure you're all aware, sometimes listening to true crime podcasts can make you feel down and you need a palate cleanser. My personal go-to game has got to be Best Fiends, the mobile puzzle game, and I'm lucky enough that they've sponsored this episode of Morbidology. As you progress through the game, you collect cute little monsters that evolve into bigger and stronger monsters. When I've been researching and writing for long periods, I'd like to take a break and play Best Fiends. I'm already on level 182. The game isn't just mindless fun. You need to use your brain to evolve your strategy as the game progresses. Engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Friends without the R, Best Fiends. Globe In is a monthly subscription box of fair trade goods from all across the world. Each artisan box is a curated and themed collection of handmade items for the home. They can include everything from ceramic and wooden jewellery chests from India and pedicure exfoliators from Nepal to salt from the Philippines, cocoa from Ghana, and other food items. It is one of the most customizable subscription boxes out there. Each month, Globe In has 4 or 5 brand new box themes, and you can choose one of these as your monthly selection. The box includes a booklet which tells you the powerful stories of the artisans who created the products. The products from Globe In aren't the only amazing thing about this company. They're also a verified member of the Fair Trade Federation, which means they pay artisans a reliable wage. So click the link to Globe In my show notes and enter promo code Morbidology for $20 off your first order. During opening statements of his murder trial, prosecutor Mark Dennis detailed the desperate phone call from Lucy as she ran for her life. The female caller was in a frightened and frantic state, saying that a man called John Lowe had just shot her mother and that she herself was running for her life. Moments later, showing extraordinary courage, the caller indicated that she had made the decision to go back to the scene of the incident, declared the prosecution. The harrowing phone call was played out during trial as family and loved ones wept in the courtroom. Prosecutor Dennis went on to describe John's version of events, wherein he claimed that he had accidentally shot Christine and Lucy, stating he does not assist Christine Lee or go to her aid to summon help after that shot as she lay bleeding on the floor. He just walks away. Hardly the signs of an accidental shooting. Prosecutor Dennis told the jury that a reason for the murders were still not known and only John could explain why he'd lost his temper in such a lethal way. The two victims are not here to give an account of what led up to this dreadful display of violence, nor to respond to any accusation or suggestion that the defendant has sought or may now seek to make following their death, he said. He described how this was evidently no accident, since John would have had to reload the shotgun. According to the prosecution, John had a love-hate relationship with Christine and Lucy. A couple of weeks before the murders, a motor mechanic had been called out to the farmhouse to repair John's Toyota. As he was working, John began complaining to the mechanic about Christine and Lucy, telling him, "Those two between them drive me fucking mad. They want to know about the ins and outs of everything." Adding that they wanted to know and control everything about the farmhouse and John's finances. Police constable Chris Gleason, who had arrested John, testified that John had told him that Christine and Lucy had been giving him shit for weeks. As he placed John in handcuffs, he asked him if there was anybody else in the farmhouse and whether they were alive or dead, to which John replied that there were 2 dead women in the farmhouse, adding, "I shot them both." John informed PC Gleason that Christine was his ex-girlfriend and claimed that Christine was supposed to be looking after him but had been starving him to death and had been keeping him from his own money. "I have to beg them for petrol money," John said to PC Gleason. John had also told PC Gleason that he had attempted to shoot himself under the chin with a double-barreled shotgun, but said that it had failed to go off. As he was being driven to Guildford Police Station, John had said, "This might sound terrible to outsiders, what happened here, but I can assure you, nothing else could be done." Police Constable Richard McEwen testified that while John was in a holding cell at Guildford Police Station, he also said, "I am glad the torment's over with those people. I couldn't take it anymore. They treated me like shit. I only got the gun this morning to put the dogs down." Police Constable Christopher Fairclough also testified that he had heard John say, "I have four dogs. Been problems with them feeding the dogs. Went round to put the dogs down." Constable Fairclough had also heard John say, "Bank accounts emptied of $350,000. John complained that Christine and Lucy had been feeding the dogs pasta, dog food and sausages, and decided that he would put the dogs down to prevent further arguments. Later on, John made comments to Police Constable Philip Potter, but this time, he claimed that the shooting was completely accidental. "It was funny how she got shot. I loaded the gun to put the four dogs down. The gun went off completely by accident. I told you that shooting the older one was a complete accident. It happened as they were pushing me out of the conservatory and the gun went off by accident." He claimed that Christine and Lucy had been pushing him out of the conservatory door when the gun went off. In his final comments to PC Potter, John said, "I made a mistake today and I'm very sorry about that." A couple of hours later, John was speaking to Detective Constable David Jones. He told the courtroom that John had said, "I don't want to get in shit over her, but she had two young kids. Otherwise, I'd have sorted her out. Stacey Banner's her name. Stacey is the sister of Lucy who went today." At this point during the trial, Stacey broke down in tears and ran out of the courtroom. During the trial, it was revealed that blood evidence indicated that Lucy had been inside the house when she was first shot in the head. Despite the head injury, she had managed to stumble outside to where she was shot once again in the chest. Prosecutor Dennis asked neuropathologist Dr. Safa Al-Siraj whether it was possible somebody with such an injury to their head could walk that distance. He replied that he believed it was possible, adding that the cerebrum on the left side of Lucy's head had been severely damaged, but there was nothing on the right side. Another pathologist, Dr. Robert Chapman, who had performed the autopsies, described how once Christine was shot in the chest, she would have collapsed immediately and would have died very quickly. Speaking about Lucy, he said he found 33 separate gunshot pellets in the tissue surrounding her head wound, which would not have been an immediately life-threatening injury. When he spoke about her chest injury, however, he described how it came from a much closer shot and would be an immediately life-threatening injury, with death following shortly thereafter. Lucy had also sustained other injuries that were consistent with blunt impact from a trauma, such as falling over. A firearm expert testified that the shotgun that killed Christine and Lucy could not have gone off by accident. "It's a purposeful act to pull the trigger. You don't just touch it and it will go off. You have to physically move your finger back to pull it," testified Paul Hogarth. He described how somebody would have to put 2.6 pounds of pressure to fire the weapon. John had claimed that the shotgun had a loose safety catch and a hair trigger. However, according to Hogarth, when he examined the shotgun, he found no issues at all and found it to be operating as it should have been. The next person to testify was Police Constable Dawn Surridge. She told the jury that while searching the farmhouse, they had discovered pieces of torn up paper. Piecing together the pieces, PC Surridge noticed that the paper related to a November 2013 dispute with John, solicitors and estate agents. After John was arrested, he told officers that Lucy had been helping him in a legal dispute with Susanna's son, Richard. But according to John, Lucy had become too involved and had blamed John for the problems he was having. John had said, "She was behaving in a really evil way. I have been under really bad stress, and it has been like this for 2 or 3 weeks." Matthew Richardson, Lucy's partner, was next to take the stand. He told the jury that just hours before Lucy and Christine were gunned down, Lucy had called him and informed him that she had feared for her safety after John had asked for the gun cabinet keys. She had told Matthew that she was concerned about the situation in the farmhouse and was worried about John having the keys to the gun cabinet. He told the jury she was not calm, somewhere in the middle, slightly stressed, and she asked me to pick her up. Matthew went on to describe how he arranged to pick Lucy up at 3 p.m. and said that he heard John in the background being agitated, but not over the top. According to Richard, Christine and Lucy had really helped John. He was extremely under the weather and malnourished. He wasn't good financially, physically, or in any other ways, he said. He described how John was charming, but at the same time, difficult. He described his behaviour as a child throwing his toys out of the pram. Under cross-examination, Richard said that Lucy had a bit of a temper and admitted that he told police that she could go off like a bomb. He went on to say that Christine was not a match for John and that John was not a man of words, but instead, a man of action. Lucy could handle John. She was much younger and fitter to handle situations with John, he said. Shortly thereafter, John was called to testify on his own behalf. He told the jury that the murders were a terrible accident. He claimed that he had been carrying the shotgun in an unsafe manner when it accidentally went off three separate times. He described his behaviour as like a moron. He described how he removed the shotgun and some cartridges from a locked cabinet in his farmhouse so that he could put the four dogs down. He told the jury that because the back door was locked, he walked through the farmhouse with the loaded gun and claimed that he was confronted by the two women in the conservatory. He said that Christine was shot first as she attempted to pull the shotgun from his hands and said that as he turned around, he accidentally fired at Lucy, who had turned to flee. This obviously completely contradicted Lucy's 999 call. When she placed that call, she had not yet been shot. John then claimed that the third accidental shot went off, but first of all, he claimed he had reloaded the gun because he still intended on putting down his four dogs, despite the fact he had just shot Christine and Lucy. He said that he accidentally shot Lucy a second time after he found her slumped on the steps out the back of the farmhouse. According to John, after the murders, he shot the dogs and then went into the conservatory to write three notes to friends before attempting to kill himself. One of the notes was about giving away the house, another was about John's mortgage arrangements, and the final was about giving away ownership of a horse. I went into the kitchen, picked up the 410, put the barrel under my jumper at my chest, and pulled the trigger. It just clicked. I thought to myself, I wonder if I have enough bottle to pull the trigger again. I pulled the trigger again and it just went click again, much to my amazement, said John. He told the jury that moments after the suicide attempt, he saw police coming down the drive and realised that he didn't have enough time for another suicide attempt. Under cross-examination, Prosecutor Dennis asked John why he had told police that he had put people down, to which John replied, "That's exactly what happened. As awful as it sounds, I did not mean to kill them. It was a terrible accident." Prosecutor Dennis responded by saying, "I am suggesting that you are inventing an explanation for something that is very simple, that you lost your temper that morning out of frustration and shot these two women quite deliberately." John replied with, "No, you are making things up." Prosecutor Dennis questioned John about how comfortable he was with handling guns. John had said that he was brought up around guns and knew gun protocol. He would have known not to carry a loaded gun inside the house. Prosecutor Dennis also put forward to John that Christine's body had been discovered in the dining room, not the conservatory, to which John replied that somebody must have moved her body. The prosecutor then questioned John over the discrepancies between the evidence he was providing in court and the prepared statement he had given to police following his arrest. Initially, John had claimed that Christine and Lucy were in the dining room smoking when they both rushed at him. The statement read in part, "As Christine was barging me, the gun went off and she stopped." John had suggested that the safety catch on the shotgun had been moved during the barging. From the witness box, John now insisted that he would not have had the safety on, so Prosecutor Dennis questioned the validity of his statement. Prosecutor Dennis also questioned John about the notes he had written before allegedly attempting to end his life. He described the letters as clear and coherent, indicating that John knew what he was writing. He questioned why there was no mention about the so-called terrible accident that had just occurred, and the prosecutor questioned John as to why. He replied with, "I didn't want to. It's not the sort of thing you put in a letter." John was also presented with forensic evidence, which showed that no other fingerprints were found on the shotgun, despite the fact he claimed that Christine had grabbed the gun. John responded by suggesting that Christine had grabbed the gun while she had clothing over her hands. It was a desperate clutch at straws. As the trial was coming to a close, Prosecutor Dennis turned to the jury and described the case as the plainest case of deliberate shooting as is possible to see. He said that John had showed a resigned acceptance of what he had done in the conversations he had with police in the immediate aftermath of the shootings, but later put together a ludicrous story by arguing that the deaths of Christine and Lucy were the result of a series of accidents. He then reread extracts from the 999 call that Lucy had placed shortly before she was shot dead, where she reiterated, "I'm going back for her, but I'll die." He asked the jurors to remember the testimony of several officers who claimed that John admitted to the murders and made statements such as, "They were tormenting me, they're not tormenting me anymore," and, "I know I shouldn't have pulled the trigger, but anyway, I did, and that's that." Prosecutor Dennis also reminded the jury that John claimed he retained possession of the shotgun throughout the entire incident and stated, "You don't retain possession of a gun after a dreadful accident. The gap between the two shots that hit Lucy Lee, that is nothing to do with an accident. He reloads the gun. That is nothing to do with an accident. He was heartless and unemotional throughout. None of that's consistent with an accident," he said. Defense lawyer Ian Laurie refuted the prosecution's arguments and referred to John as a physically frail man who could not handle a gun with nimble dexterity or strength. He warned the jury to be careful when interpreting the comments John made to police in the hours after the shooting. "What you have got is an elderly man struggling to cope with the knowledge and recognition that he has been responsible for the untimely deaths of two women," he said. After 8 days of testimony and evidence, the jury retired to consider their verdicts. John Lowe was ultimately found guilty of the murders. He received 2 life sentences with a minimum term of 25 years, meaning that John would die behind bars. John was emotionless as he was led to the cells. The murders revived debate about how police apply Britain's strict gun licensing laws. In the wake of the trial, Stacey lambasted Surrey police for returning John's weapons to him shortly before the murders, despite her repeated warnings.
"The officers dealing with John Lowe, after he threatened to kill me, totally failed to identify the clear risk to women that he posed. The failure has cost my mum and sister their lives. All the police had to do was read the file. Instead, they put the gun in John Lowe's hands."
Surrey police subsequently apologised to Christine and Lucy's family. They had earlier referred themselves to the Independent Police Complaints Commission, who conducted a supervised investigation into their decision to return the weapons to John. The findings from 2 separate reports from firearms licensing experts found that their decision to return the weapons was flawed and did not meet national standards. A police spokesman said, "While a full investigation into this matter remains ongoing, in light of these early findings, we have spoken with members of Christine and Lucy Lee's family to apologise for this." They additionally admitted that 3 Surrey police employees remained subject to a gross misconduct investigation.
"I'm afraid the firearms licensing unit did not behave as it should have done and made catastrophic mistakes, which led to this tragic, tragic results. As soon as the murders happened, we got in independent police forces to review our firearms licences. So I am confident that the firearms licensing unit is now fit for purpose, which it clearly wasn't at the time. The tragedy should never have happened."
Following the verdict, even more chilling information about John's life came out in the open. It was revealed that 17 years earlier, John had tried to hire a hitman to murder Susanna. He had asked a man named Paddy Booker to help kill Susanna because she had told lawyers to fight John for half of the farmhouse. Paddy was a security chief that knew John through buying guard dogs off him. Paddy had informed a senior officer in the South East Regional Crime Squad of John's murderous plans in 1997. According to Paddy, the officer said that they would make some calls, and the following day, Paddy called back only to be told that John was not going to be arrested, but said that they would keep an eye on him. Paddy told the Mirror, if they'd acted then, he could not have gone on to kill. This revelation didn't come as much of a surprise to Susanna's daughter, Teresa Barry, who said that John was a nasty piece of work that often beat her mother up. Stacey spoke with the media once again and suggested that when Susanna died, it caused something in John to flip. She described how just days after Susanna's death, she came to the farmhouse to help him out. However, John stormed into the kitchen armed with a shotgun. He pointed the gun right at Stacey and said, "If you don't fuck off out of it, I'm going to blow you up." It had actually been this event that led to John's guns being removed from his home. Stacey had called police to report the threats. In response, John shot and killed Stacey's favourite Rottweiler, Bud, and burned his body. "It was a warning," said Stacey. According to Stacey, there were numerous incidents, yet Surrey Police still decided to return John's guns.
"I could only tell Surrey Police a number of times that he was dangerous before actually I thought they would do something. Realistically, they didn't. They didn't believe me, they believed him, and they believed him all the way along. And it's cost my mum and sister their lives. I blame them. I blame them for the murders. They handed John Lowe the guns."
Following this incident, John asked Stacey to come back to the farmhouse to help him rehome some of the 52 dogs that were there. According to Stacey, "Each time I went up there, my life was threatened. He would say, 'You're trespassing.' He would threaten me in front of the police. He didn't give a shit. The police heard it all. And this is what they told me. Don't take any notice of him. He's just a frail old man." According to the Independent Police Complaints Commission, Surrey Police were aware of the hitman allegations when they chose to give John his guns back. Many wondered, with more than one incident, how John had the gun license in the first place. Surely after he attempted to hire a hitman to kill Susanna, his license should have been revoked. It was soon enough announced that dozens of potentially mistaken decisions to hand back seized weapons over the last 3 years would now be reviewed. According to a police source, the concern is that more than one decision made by these people has been wrong. This could mean more dangerous gun owners out on the streets who are not fit to own a weapon. In November, Chief Constable Andy Marsh, who is in charge of police firearms policy, revealed that they were working on tightening the licensing regime to ensure that an enduring marker was put on the medical records of gun owners. Doctors were subsequently ordered to tell police if a patient who held a gun license showed signs of suicidal tendencies, dementia, psychosis, or domestic abuse. The British Medical Association responded to the update with a statement which read, "We support measures to ensure closer working between the medical profession and police. Doctors are not, however, in a position to make assessment of future risks presented by firearms holders. The routine assessment of risk in relation to individuals who hold or wish to hold firearms is solely a matter for the police." Then in January of 2015, it was announced that three unidentified police workers were suspended and could face criminal charges for returning the weapons to John. Meanwhile, there were calls for a public inquiry into the police and state response into domestic violence. Stacey openly backed this call and said that it was essential for a public inquiry to be mounted to examine systematic failings by police in the way that domestic violence is dealt with. It's estimated that in England and Wales, two women die a week in domestic violence homicides. However, according to the domestic violence charity Refuge, a number of police forces still treat domestic violence as a second-class crime. "I had heard the statistics that two women are killed every week by a partner or ex-partner, but I never thought that one week those two women would be my two women, my mum and my sister," said Stacey. According to Women's Aid, it costs £9,500 for a woman to stay in a refuge for 6 months. Before 2010, there was £10 million per year in refuge funding from the state to preserve a national network of shelters for domestic violence survivors. Since then, however, local council cost-cutting and changes to housing benefit rules meant that a number of these refuges were forced to close. The final report by the Independent Police Complaints Commission found that Surrey Police failed to fully consider and properly assess information about John before they decided to return his guns.
Our findings fall into two parts. We had some failings by two individuals, police members of staff working in the firearms licensing team, and we had organisational failings in relation to how they were managed and supervised.
It was ultimately decided that the police officers would not be facing criminal charges following an investigation. They found no evidence of misconduct, but found that they had failed to properly review John's police file. The review had additionally found that firearms licensing team members did not take simple investigative steps, such as accessing Surrey Police's information and intelligence systems. They also noted highlighted risks that were posed by John or properly address whether he was a danger to the public when giving him back his gun license. One firearm license team member was fired, while the second retired. The licensing of firearms is a responsibility with obvious ramifications if not done properly. Our recommendations will contribute to a significantly improved function in Surrey, said Commander Tom Milsom, following the recommendations. Then in March of 2017, it was announced that Stacey Banner had been convicted of defrauding Susanna in January of that year. She was convicted of five charges of fraud, totaling £107,950. She was sentenced to 12 months in prison and suspended for 18 months. An investigation into the fraud also revealed that Stacey had an accomplice in the crimes, and that accomplice was John. Before the murders and shortly before Susanna's death, Stacey and John had taken advantage of Susanna's dementia and had been withdrawing money from her account. Stacey blamed John completely for the fraud and announced that she would be planning to appeal, adding that she loved Susanna like she was her second mother. Stacey would also later announce that she would be suing Surrey Police. She reiterated that police knew all too well about John's domineering, violent and threatening behaviour, yet didn't act on her reports, or on the report that he wanted somebody to kill Susanna. She suggested that these instances weren't classified as domestic violence because John wasn't married to either Susanna or Christine. Then in early 2018, Christine and Lucy's family demanded an inquest into the actions of Surrey Police. The solicitor representing the family, Jesse Nichols, suggested that an inquest could answer the questions that still lingered about the police's actions. At a hearing, he said, "It simply cannot be said that the facts and circumstances have been investigated thoroughly, brought to light and exposed to public scrutiny. Article 2 of the European Convention on Human Rights, therefore, has not been met and an inquest is needed." Jason Beer, the solicitor representing Surrey Police, argued that there was no need for an inquest, adding that the investigation focuses had been fully met by the totality of the investigation taken to date. In August of 2018, John died at Hyde's Own Jail near Banstead, Surrey, from a blood disorder caused by bone marrow cancer. In May of the following year, a jury inquest into the murders began at Surrey Coroner's Court. Andy Petherbridge was representing Juliet James, who was the sister of Christine and the aunt of Lucy. In a statement issued on behalf of Julia, he said, "It is hoped that over the coming weeks, all contributing factors are fully investigated to establish whether anything different could and should have been done to prevent what was the most tragic and heartbreaking loss of two people who were loved so much." The inquest would be examining how aware Surrey Police and other agencies were of the threat that John posed. During the inquest, it was revealed that after threatening Stacey with the shotgun, Stacey made a statement saying that she did not support John's prosecution. Stacey sobbed as she told the jury that despite John's abuse while growing up, she had still loved John like he was her father. She said, "I loved him because he could be incredibly kind to Lucy and I. He could be incredibly funny. I hate saying it. Yes, he hit us." Evidence was presented that Stacey had called police shortly after Susanna's death and told them, I'm just worried that he is going to shoot me, shoot himself, or shoot someone else because of the grief. She described how several times after Susanna's death, John had said, I'm going to go with her. I'm going to go into the woods and shoot myself. Stacey later called police once again after John had threatened her with a shotgun, telling them, I just feel sorry for him. He's in grief. He has been hit hard. I do not want any nastiness. I just want it to be resolved for his sake. Guns are a serious thing. The inquest ultimately ruled that numerous failings by police contributed to the murder of Christine and Lucy. They determined that Surrey police failed to have a system in place which ensured that the decision whether or not to return a shotgun certificate and shotgun to a certificate holder following removal pending a criminal investigation was made or approved by a senior police officer. They additionally found that the Police Force Firearms Licensing Department failed to investigate sufficiently whether it was safe to return the shotguns to John following the threat he made.
The police described what happened in the house as an execution.
It was worse than an execution. Executions are quick. And I keep thinking, you know, she should have hid. It took a long time to die. It took her quite a long... It wasn't instant with Lucy. You know, the police took 45 minutes to get there. So it wasn't instant because this... Gosh, she's so brave. Wasn't she brave? So then he beat her, shot the dogs, then stood over her with that gun. Fucking absolute monster. He couldn't let me have her, you see. He couldn't let me have her. He couldn't leave me her. He couldn't leave me her. I want her back.
Domestic violence is a global problem that can affect anybody at any time. Each week in England and Wales, two women are killed in domestic violence attacks, while more than a million suffer domestic violence each year. Anybody can become a victim, regardless of race, class, wealth, age, or level of education. Furthermore, anybody can become a domestic abuser. While Surrey police gave John Lowe his guns back, one can't help but wonder if it were John's frail and elderly appearance that gave the misleading impression that he was harmless, when in actuality, he was more dangerous than anybody could have ever imagined. Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'd like to take a second to say a massive thank you to my new Patreon supporters, Carlin North, Melanie Berrigan, Heather, and Georgette Duncan. I am eternally grateful for your support, and it helps Morbidology continue to grow. If you'd like to support the show in return for exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, early release episodes, ad-free episodes, and of course, the most important thing, my undying love, then please check out Morbidology on Patreon or Himalaya Plus. The links are in the show notes. Can I ask that if you enjoy Morbidology, please consider voting for me for the Listener's Choice Award at the British Podcast Awards. I've included a link in the show notes, and it's as simple as typing Morbidology into the search bar. I know a little indie podcast like Morbidology won't stand the chance against the big boys, but hey, one can dream. Big thanks to everybody who simply listened to an episode, commented on an episode, shared an episode with your friends. All of the support is very much appreciated. Also, make sure you visit us at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. And stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a promo for the amazing podcast, Depths of Darkness. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.
Hey there, listeners. We're Depth of Darkness, the podcast that dives deep into all things dark and wrong in this world. I'm Mandy.
And I'm retired Major Hugh Jazz coming at you. In your face.
If you like all things paranormal, dark, creepy, perhaps a little freaky, then join us on this journey into the depths of darkness. And the best part, we top it all off with some dark humor.
What?
If you like things of the paranormal sort, such as real-life paranormal experiences, ghosts, demonic spiders, or even something extraordinary like UFOs or real-life extraterrestrials, maybe some killer clowns perhaps, then we're right up your alley. If all of this intrigues you and tickles your fancies,
perhaps you didn't wipe good enough,
then dive deep with us, and I mean deep.